All right, I see it's now 5 o'clock. I'm gonna go ahead and call our Tuesday, January 16th, Columbia City Council pre-council to order. First up, we have the open portion of our labor presentations, and then we'll go into a closed meeting after that. So who am I giving this to? Who starts?
Actually, first up is local 955.
Okay, I didn't know like if Kathy, if you did introductions or if I just. Andrew can introduce himself. Right. We don't need to call roll on pre-council.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Andrew Hutchinson. I'm the union representative for Local 955. I hope everyone's the same form today. We represent public works, utilities, parks and rec, airport, building maintenance, and we are currently in the process of finalizing water distribution. We're just going to go over some top lines today, and we should be in and out pretty quick. So these are kind of our big themes that we're working on. So one of the things that we want to talk about is a new minimum wage for City of Columbia workers. We also want to talk about some pay grade adjustments that got missed in the class and comp study. We want to talk about hazard pay, exploring childcare assistance / reimbursement. We think the county has been taking some significant strides in this, and that's something the city should consider taking on as well. We want to be an employer of choice. And then also wage compression, hitting on this theme of years of service, not time in class. So when we talk about a minimum wage, we're talking about a minimum wage for all full-time positions, all part-time positions, all temporary positions, and a minimum wage for all subcontracted work. We need to make sure that when we are paying for work to get done, whether it's in-house or out-house, that we are rewarding people and treating them with the dignity that they deserve and not exploiting them. Next up, I'm not going to go through, there's many more than just these pay grade adjustments, but I kind of wanted to talk about two in particular, just to highlight the type of things that we're looking at. Container maintenance techs, these are folks who work on those big dumpsters, they work in the solid waste departments. They maintain containers. But frequently what they do is they fill in for commercial solid waste refuse collectors. The issue is that their pay grade is actually lower than a refuse collector 2 pay grade. What we want to make sure is that when folks are doing work, in some ways the container maintenance work is more technical than refuse collector 2 work. We want to make sure that folks are being rewarded appropriately. We also believe that the equipment mechanic at the City of Columbia was missed this year. He's the only person that exists in that position, and his pay grade was not adjusted. His type of work and responsibilities is very similar to a vehicle mechanic too. We want to make sure that for longtime employees of the city who operate in specialized positions like equipment mechanics for parks and rec, that we are rewarding them for their responsibility, workload, and skills. Hazard pay, this has come up in the last couple bargaining cycles. It's coming up again, especially as we're dealing with winter weather right now. A lot of our folks drive for a living, and we believe that driving or working in confined spaces or around live electric wires and sewer overflows should be compensated for that type of work when they're putting their lives on the line to maintain this city. So Boone County has taken some pretty big steps forward in providing child care for their first responders. We think that's fantastic. What we hear from our members is that they're very excited about utilizing paid family leave this year, but that a lot of their paychecks get eaten up by child care. So we want to explore with the city what is the possibility of creating a grant for someone to provide childcare to City of Columbia employees during business hours, and we give 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. as an option, or what is the way that these employees can submit receipts for reimbursement from the city. For us, making the city a family-friendly employer, it keeps employees loyal, retains employees, We see that with 80 and out and paid family leave, we're setting up the city to be an employer of choice. We think these are fantastic strides. We think that childcare, which I can tell you as a new parent, when you look at the cost, it's staggering. And it's not something that our employees are able to budget for. Wage compression. Our step scale that was passed last year is designed so that members move one step with every year. The issue is that a lot of job titles have undergone reclassifications in the past years. People have been shuffled around, and we don't believe that time and class is an effective way of determining what someone's wage should be. So we think years of service makes more sense. So people's time with the city, not time in that specific position, is what we think. Because even right now, a lateral transfer under our understanding of the ordinances, so transferring from one position to another but maintaining the same pay grade, resets a time in class. So we actually have employees right now who are considering lateral transfers to fill much needed positions, but are afraid that if they do it right now, they could be sacrificing a massive wage increase. So what that means is that folks are not taking positions that it would be in the city's best interest for them to take because they're afraid they're going to miss out on this wage compression bump. And additionally, we want employees to move up one step minimum, keeping in line with the way a step scale should work, and a cost of living adjustment to all scales to keep up with inflation. But that third item, we know we're going to focus more on the wage opener. And that is all of our presentation. Kathy, remind me, is this, do folks ask questions now? Or
the council came from the light.
Can you just revisit the question that you raised about the maintenance collector or the collector position, filling in for a refuse collector 2 position? Walk me through that again.
Yeah. So container maintenance techs work out at the LOC, like the landfill. Mm-hmm. But often when commercial solid waste, we didn't have enough drivers. We're still looking for more drivers. They'll go fill in on those routes, which when ad pay was in effect, they're like, oh, okay, I'll take the ad pay. Now that there's no ad pay and those folks got the $5, $6 bumps, the container
maintenance. Which folks got the?
Refuse collectors.
Thank you.
Yeah. The container maintenance techs did not receive that bump. So what you saw is the container maintenance techs, who generally have higher years of service than the refuse collectors because it's a more specialized position. So theoretically, the idea was, you throw trash, you drive residential, you drive commercial, you're a container maintenance tech. That was kind of the arc. Right now, you have container maintenance techs who are making less than the people that they are called to fill in for.
Okay.
Are they typically CDLs or no?
All these positions are CDLs. Well, in solid waste, essentially. The only other thing I'll say about that is there's just a lot of concern about how the shuffling of work and temporary employees factor into that. We still have employees who are unable to get jobs at the city or even leave the city and then immediately come back and fill in a temporary capacity, but are unable to get full-time jobs at the city, but still work for the city through temp agencies.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Anything else?
Other questions for Andrew? All right. And then I didn't click on the last agenda. Do we have these presentations?
We can make sure that you get them.
We just got these.
So okay.
We can, now that they're presented and shared publicly,
they're presented.
You guys.
Okay, thank you. That was it.
Thank you,
Andrew.
Our next presentation is by Zach Corbett from Local 1055 in Mike's.
All right, I'm Zach Rivette. For those who don't know me, I'm the president of the Columbia Professional Firefighters. We represent roughly 97% of the fire department. And so this year, the theme's gonna be super easy. I don't want, well, next year we start a whole new contract, and I'd really like to make this super, super easy for Kathy and for me as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So we're just going to focus on our compensation. We still continue to work on the Critical Illness Trust. If you guys remember, that was an issue that was pushed to mediation during last year's bargaining cycle. We're still working through that. We don't have an agreement on that yet, but I wanted to remind you that that is something we're still working on. So we'll have a little bit about that. Compensations being the big one this year. Our members love our pay plan. This is the fourth year, I guess, we'll go into with this pay plan. Guys love it. The progress has been really good. We feel like we're on par with our comparable cities, but we can't stop. We cannot stop, or else we'll find ourselves rapidly falling behind again, creating a situation where we're going to have to make massive adjustments again that have led to where we're at right now. Obviously, inflation rates, the consumer price index, and consumer buying power are all things that go into, you know, how we decide what we think is a reasonable rate, and I'll go into those in a minute. But long or the short, we need to continue moving our members along the steps and across the board adjustments to adjust for inflation and those consumer prices. So over the last 12 months, CPI has increased by 4%. Purchasing power is at record low for employees or buyers in the United States right now. And the federal cost of living adjustment has been made for 2024 at 3.2%. So we'll propose another across-the-board adjustment to keep up with these rates, plus the steps that keep our members moving along in the pay plan. The Critical Illness Trust, once again, this is similar to what you've seen before in the past. We set up this trust. It's designed to give presumptive benefits to firefighters who are diagnosed with cancer in the line of duty. There's clearly a correlation between cancer and our job, and that happens because of our job. The easiest way to put it is that there's currently not bunker gear made that we wear into fires that does not have carcinogens in it. We are literally wrapping ourselves in that every single time we put that stuff on daily, and there's not an alternative to it. So this year, the federal government passed legislation that gave $20 billion in funding to start the research and development of new gear, but currently nothing exists that does not have carcinogens in it. We're literally putting that on. And then in every fire we go to, we add to those. So we're just continuing to absorb more and more throughout our career.
Sam,
yes, go ahead.
I just want to be clear. You're saying that the equipment that you wear
correct
contains
our pants and our coat. They have what's called PFAS, if you're familiar with that. The chemicals made by DuPont and you know, those major manufacturers. It's the water resistant material that's in those that there's not gear made without it. That it doesn't exist on the market. So that's just what the world we live in. So this trust is set up basically to provide a benefit or compensation to our members. If they're diagnosed with one of 17 cancers, then they submit an application. The fund then starts sending them a monthly check up to the limit that we agree to enter into the trust in. And they can get the compensation that they need to start their treatment, their care for their diagnosis. This just goes through a list of the increased incidence of cancer in firefighters. Mesothelioma will be in the highest. Rectal, prostate cancer. I actually talked to three retirees in the last month that have been through cancer diagnosis since their retirement. And one of the things the trust does is cover us for 15 years beyond retirement, post-retirement. So even if we don't get that diagnosis while we're still working, this will be covered by this for 15 years beyond our retirement date. And then overall, firefighters are are 9% more likely to be diagnosed with cancer and 14% more likely to die from cancer than the general public, just because of our job, strictly because of what we do. So this goes through just some of the advantages, making sure that, you know, our firefighters are covered. This year, in November, there are currently 84 departments. That includes Jeff City and Springfield, who just recently got in. That are in the trust. They cover about 2,600 firefighters across the state. It talks about the retiree and our maximum coverage. I'll talk about it just now. The one of the concerns of the city has been the increasing rates of this over time. And this year, they had an actuary study done, and they were able to cap the rates. They'll no longer go up anymore. 175 is going to be the rate forever for the foreseeable future for this. So the rates are capped now for the max limit. And then last year, they added mental health coverage. There's a $10,000 compensation for somebody who's diagnosed with PTSD or PTS due to the line of duty incidents. So mental health coverage is also included as a part of this when you're in the trust. Yes, sir.
Another question. Go ahead. Maximum coverage for full-time
firefighters.
Can you describe more what that $300,000
is? Yeah, so that's the maximum limit. So basically
the firefighter?
To the firefighter, yes. That would be the limit. So they have a $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 limits that you enter into, kind of like an insurance policy. And then whatever that limit is, when you have that diagnosis, that would be the max coverage that you could receive from the trust.
And is this additional coverage to any personal coverage help?
That's one of the things that we talk about. So like work comp, if a member was to get cancer, they would be able to file a work comp claim. However, if we're a member of this and we receive that compensation, regardless of what that claim is, that the claim will be reduced by the compensation you receive from the trust. So it offsets. So the city's not, out the person's not getting multiple double coverage, basically, to the city. Like I said, they added the mental health coverage. That's a $10,000, I think, limit on that for PTSD, PTS diagnosis related to trauma, mental health trauma from the job. So just a quick physical note. Looks like if we just rough estimate $28,000 a year for this with the rates capped at $175,000, and then roughly $1 million for our members for compensation that could, depending on what that number is. So that is the basis of this. Like I said, my goal is to keep this simple. We have a big year coming next year. I anticipate a lot of effort and time. As Kathy knows, I like to bring it all together at one time. So work together to maintain progress and deliver on the critical medical coverage that our members need. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Questions for Zach? I just want you on record saying we're happy with our wages for like the time being. You said at the beginning, and I'm like, I was like, yes, Zach.
I'm on record.
He's officially on record.
Yes. Okay.
But we got it. We can't stop.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Sorry. Right there.
Say your name and you show up. Just perfect. Don Weaver is here to represent on CPOA, and Mike's going to get it ready for you, Don.
He's always been a sharp dresser.
Didn't have him. Sorry about that.
We'll get the slides for our previous two presentations.
I'm Don Weaver. I'm General Counsel to the Columbia Police Officers Association. Thanks for being here, brave and cold. We're going to just talk about highlights of our goals and objectives for this year's collective bargaining. You've seen a little bit of this before in years past. So our overall goal, CPOA's overall goal, which I know we share with the city and with the building, it really is to attract and retain the best and the brightest to be Columbia police officers. That is our overarching goal. We have really three specific things I'll hit on tonight. First is pay. So we want to implement a pay step plan. I know that's not a surprise. We've been working on it for various degrees for several years. I think 4 years ago, we were able to make some movements that were kind of leading us to a pay step plan. The year following, it was a little slower, and then after that, we paused, and then last year, we took a gigantic step back. I understand there's a bunch of reasons for that, but 4 years ago, we had a detective with 19 years on making 19 cents an hour more, really, than a five-year cop. And I think everybody recognizes the problems with that. As of today, we have people with 6 years on making the same as someone we're hiring today. And that was as a result of the increase in starting pay that was implemented last year. I understand the reason for that. Obviously, we have to be competitive with starting wages. But really, we do need, for the long term, we need a pay step plan to keep up with agencies our size, to be able to attract the best and the brightest to be Missouri. I'm sorry, the best and the brightest in Missouri to be Columbia police officers. That includes a pay step plan that really just dictates, similar to what you've discussed and seen with the fire department, but we can set it in stone once and forget it. We have starting pay, and then we have a percentage above starting pay for each, you know, each rung, each level of tenure. And then it's really easy to do the math to figure out what that will cost in the future. And then we don't have to keep wasting your time coming back and asking for adjustments to the step plan. We just talked about across the board raises. So we're asking again, is that the city keep up with the other benchmark cities, including the benchmark cities the city relied on their pay study last year, and implement a pay step plan for the police department that after we implement and lock in the pay step plan, then we're asking for an across the board increase that will make us competitive. At all rungs of the ladder, so that we don't end up losing people with 5 and 10 years of experience to go elsewhere. The second thing we'd like to encourage the city to consider is how we can enhance or really restore the pension. And a little bit of backstory: the City of Columbia Police Pension used to have a 20-year fixed defined benefit pension plan. And we moved away from it right after the economic problems of 2009-ish, which caused the pension fund funding percentage to go way down. Or right now, today, as we sit here on the highest stock market DJI in history. So I think we need to consider how we can fully better invest in either restoring or enhancing the pension offering. Anecdotally, we didn't have people leaving with as much time as they have on now when we see them leave. In other words, we didn't have a lot of people leaving with 10, 11, 12 years of service under the old pension plan. So that's just one other thing we'd like you to consider. And the third thing I'll touch on today really has nothing to do with pay. It really is what we've talked about before and what we've made a little bit of progress on, but that is ultimately police officers make decisions in a split second where literal life and death situations sometimes. And there's always room for hindsight analysis. There's always second guessing. There's always armchair quarterbacking that's going to occur. And we understand that, and that's natural, and we encourage that. But we really ask the council to demonstrate its support for law enforcement and law enforcement officers by taking discipline and requiring that for at least significant discipline, suspension, demotion, termination, and ultimately, those facts be evaluated by a neutral third-party arbitrator, someone outside the city, someone who doesn't have any ties to the community, someone that doesn't have any ties to the any of the activist groups, someone that doesn't have any ties to the voters, someone who will literally look at the facts and the evidence and the policy and the law and give an unbiased opinion about discipline. And that is a way that this council can demonstrate that it truly does support these police officers who go out and make these decisions in a split second for all of us. One point on that, there is some case law, I'm sure city attorneys are familiar with, but there's some case law suggesting that with for cause employees, which our police officers are today, actually require something more than what we're offering them in terms of the personal advisory board. And that's a longer discussion I won't bore you with tonight. But those are the 3 points, the 3 highlights I wanted to bring to you tonight. I look forward to working with the city this year on these and other issues. Do you have any questions? Anything else?
I don't questions have notes, for Don.
So hopefully, if questions you don't have that, I don't have that at my fingertips.
So, Don, on the third one, that's related to like the actual discipline and enforcement. If something were to happen, like in part of that conversation, would you want, you know, the city to say, we will review the process? You know what I mean? Like, we're aware of a situation where we're going to review it. Like, they can still do that, right? But it's just that it's going to follow the process of whatever it is that's agreed upon.
Well, so what we're requesting here is, let me just break it down. So how the process would work currently, a complaint occurs or there's a use of force or whatever it is, either of which would trigger an investigation internally. And then that ultimately would kind of make its way through the investigative process through the chief and with some input and interplay with the civilian review board. all of this, by the way, what I've described so far, all the people involved making the decisions are all either at will or appointed by you. And ultimately, then right now, it goes to the city manager, who serves at your pleasure, right? And so it would make its way through that process. And then what we're asking for is that at the end of that process, after this department has made a decision, after the CPRB has weighed in, if and when the city manager has weighed in, we would ask that that you show your support for your officers by allowing that decision to be ultimately made by someone who's not bound by, from my perspective, potentially influenced by local activists. And I'm not suggesting the council, because the council doesn't have any direct role in that process. But ultimately, the city manager appoints your pleasure. And ultimately, we know that there are groups and individuals in our community who can pretty effective at making a lot of noise about things. And so that's really all we're asking for is just decide in advance, when there isn't a controversy at your feet, decide when there is a controversy. Because it's not if, it's when. You guys know that. We're agreeing ahead of time to let someone who is unbiased, purely 100% unbiased, make that decision based on the law and the facts. And that will go eons towards demonstrating your commitment to support your police officers. When you let them know, like, hey, look, we know there's a tough community of police in compared to others sometimes. We know that you're going to be scrutinized. That's part of it. That's good. We're not against that as a CPA. But we also want you to know that we know you're going to make these tough decisions, and we know you're going to be in this tough situation, but we're going to tell you in advance. We're going to make sure that you know that politics are out of this, that someone outside who's going to look fairly at the law and the facts is going to ultimately make decisions, and your employment, your future, your livelihood, your reputation is not going to be bound by or co-opted by, and it's not even going to get, there's not even going to be a possible appearance that it's going to be influenced or co-opted by kind of the noise, I'll call it, if that makes sense.
Nick.
Don, I want to be sure I'm clear about that. This is a longer conversation, I recognize, and I honestly am not interested in getting into the details here.
Okay.
But are you talking about taking the responsibility or taking the decision, which ultimately now falls to the city manager, out of the city manager's hands and being placed in the hands of an outside agency or a group or agent?
Kind of not. I mean, you look puzzled, but there's a long. This has been going on in our country for decades and really forever. The idea is that we want to take politics out of police work. You want the cops to be able to do their jobs according to their policy, according to training, according to the law, and not have even a temptation for any of you, no, because you're not involved in the process, but for the city manager or whoever to at least be stressing out and tempted with having to cow to the noise as opposed to looking at the facts and the evidence. And so I know it sounds foreign. It is a foreign concept if you come from a private background, but that's not where we are. We need, the cops are making these decisions and taking these risks on our behalf. We owe it to them to tell them, hey, when you do something, which you will, we will make sure you're judged fairly. And by the way, the arbitration process is very long and very developed. So this is not like we're just saying, let's just appoint Bob to make a decision. There's a whole structure, it's called alternative dispute resolution. It involves mediation and arbitration, and there is a whole lot more to that conversation. But yeah, ultimately I'm saying that we want to subject the city manager's decision to review by someone who doesn't serve at the pleasure of the council. And we want that decision to be binding on the city. That's exactly, literally what I'm asking for.
Yeah. You're right, probably more conversation to have. Any other questions for Don? No. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is CPLA?
No, they withdrew the opportunity. So okay. That was our last.
That was our last public? All right. Is there any conversation before we move into closed session? Chris? All right. I move that the City Council of the City of Columbia, Missouri, to immediately go into a closed meeting here in Conference Room 1A, 1B of City Hall to discuss the preparation, including any discussions or work product on behalf of a public governmental body or its representatives for negotiations, with employee groups pursuant to Section 610.0219 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri, and sealed bids and related documents until the bids are opened, and sealed proposals and related documents, or any documents related to a negotiated contract until a contract is executed, or all proposals are rejected pursuant to Section 610.0212 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri. Can I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Rachel. I'll call roll. Ms. Peters? Betsy? Ms. Buffalo, yes. Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
Yes. Ms. Prophet?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
And Mr. Water is absent. All right.